Joseph Andrews by Henry Fielding, dramatized for radio by John Scotney, with June Barry, Cornelius Garrett, John Franklin Robbins, and John Rye.
The final part, containing several new matters not expected. Habit. Ah, habit, my good friends. It hath so vast a prevalence over the human mind that there is scarce anything too strange or too strong to be asserted of it. Consider Lady Booby. To avoid the censure of loving one so much beneath her as Joseph Andrews, she was now so habituated to condemning him that she soon imposed on herself once more the belief that she really did hate that which she loved. And though her great love for Joseph had caused her to faint away when she heard Parson Adams publish the banns of marriage between Fanny and Joseph, yet she still ardently counterfeited, even to herself, a great apathy for Joseph, when she shortly summoned Mr. Adams before her.
I wonder, Mr. Adams, that you should show such affection to this villain Andrews, who has been turned out of my household for his notorious misdeeds.
My lady, I...
Mr. Adams?
I really must protest. I have never heard any harm of Mr. Joseph Andrews, nor of...
Mr. Joseph Andrews, I don't mister such fellows to me.
And as for the young woman, Fanny Goodwill, I assure you, your ladyship, she is the sweetest-tempered, honestest, worthiest young creature. As to her beauty...
Her beauty, eh? And what has a clergyman with such?
I do not commend her on that account, though all men allow that she is the handsomest woman, gentle or simple, that has ever appeared in the parish.
Mr. Adams, you are very impertinent. And is this country beauty to stock with your assistance? To stock the parish with other penniless beauties?
Madam,
sir, our poor is numerous enough already. I will have no more vagabonds settled here. Mr. Adams, I desire you will publish the banns between Andrews and this Fanny Goodwill no more without my orders.
Madam, if anyone puts in a proper caution...
Caution? Caution? Andrews is a vagabond. And he shall not settle here and bring a nest of beggars into the parish, even if they be beauties.
Madam, with the utmost submission to your ladyship, I have been informed by Lawyer Scout that any person who serves a year gains a settlement in the parish where he serves.
Lawyer Scout? Lawyer Scout is an impudent coxcomb. I will have no Lawyer Scout interfere with me. I repeat, I desire you to proceed no further.
Madam, surely the parties being poor is no reason against their marrying. God forbid. The poor have little enough of this world already. It should be barbarous indeed to deny them the common privileges and innocent enjoyments which nature indulges even to the animal creation.
What? Do you affront my ears with such loose discourse? You clergyman. Mr. Adams, I shall mention but one short word. It is my orders that you publish these banns no more, and if you dare, I will recommend it to the vicar, your master, to discard you from his service.
Madam, I know not what your ladyship means by the terms master and service. I am in the service of but one master, and he will never discard me for doing my duty. While my conscience is clear, I shall never fear what man can do to me.
I condemn my humility for demeaning myself to converse with you so long.
Madam, I am assured, when you have inquired further into this matter, you will applaud, not blame, my proceeding. And so, I humbly take my leave of you.
And this he did with many bows, or at least many attempts at a bow. No sooner had Mr. Adams left than Lady Booby began violently ringing her bell.
Slipthorpe! Slipthorpe! Where the devil are you, you lazy hussy? Slipthorpe! Slipthorpe! Come here at
My
once, or
I'll...
This Lawyer Scout is one of your gallants, isn't he?
Mr. Scout? One of my... Prithee, my lady, I protest if I...
Yes, I thought he was. Well, you tell Lawyer Scout he must stop interfering with my servants.
Lady, I protest. chest he has never...
Not you, your ninny. He may do what he likes with you, if he's the stomach for it. Oh. No, I mean Andrews.
Oh, heavens, madam. Joseph? I never thought... What has he
Never mind. You tell your fine friend, Lawyer Scout, I'll come to see him this afternoon and let him be there without fail.
This Scout was one of those fellows who, without any knowledge of the law or being bred to it, take upon themselves, in defiance of an act of Parliament, to act as lawyers in the country. They are the pests of society and a scandal to a profession to which, indeed, they do not belong.
Oh, Lady Booby, I'm honoured to see you.
So you should be. I hope Slipslop has acquainted you with my difficulty. I'm resolved to have no discarded servants of mine settled here. And so, if this be your law, Mr. Scout, I shall send for another lawyer.
My dear, most honoured Lady Booby, should you send for 100 lawyers, none of them could alter the law. See here, I have in one of these books... here it is. Somewhat dusty.
Have done, sirrah. I hope your law is not as dusty as your books. Slipslop tells me you're not as great a fool as you look. What's to be done then, Master Scout? Come, answer me.
Dear Mrs. Slipslop, it's too kind to my poor talents. Now, as I said, the law is the law, but Madam Aloya may sometimes, have it in his power to prevent the law's taking effect. It is, of course, by no means easy and may be expensive.
Well, is that enough?
Oh, my lady, it is most generous. It is a most generous advance payment. Though, Now, madam, there is a material difference between being settled in law and in fact, if I may refer you to the...
No more books. I'm half choked already. Don't tell me your facts and your ifs. I don't understand your gibberish. I am simply resolved the wench shall not settle here. I will not suffer such beauties as these to produce children for us to keep.
Beauties, indeed. Your ladyship is pleased to be merry.
Eh? Well, I confess I hardly observed her myself, but Mr. Adams described her so to me.
Oh, my lady, no. What would Mr. Adams know of such matters?
Oh. Well. But, dear Mr. Scout, let her be what she will. These ugly women likewise bring children, you know. You and I must prevent the marriage.
True, madam. I will see Mr. Adams. His only objection is doubtless that he shall lose his fee. And truly, every man ought to have his proper fee. Your ladyship, I think I may venture to promise you success. The laws of this land are not so vulgar to permit a mean fellow to contend with one of your ladyship's fortune.
Say you so, my dear learned Mr. Scout. Or should I say, Sergeant Scout.
Oh, my lady, we have indeed one sure card, which is to carry them before Justice Frolic, who, on hearing your ladyship's name, will certainly commit them without further questions. And once, madam, we are in Broidwell, we seldom hear any more, and they're either starved to death or eaten up by vermin in a month's time.
But enough. It is to such rascallions that the law owes the ill will which weak persons bear toward it. Mr. Scout, having undertaken her cause, the Lady Booby departed. All that night and the next day she passed with the utmost anxiety, a soul tossed up and down by many turbulent and opposite passions. She loved, hated, pitied, scorned, despised the same person by fits, which changed in a very short interval. But what of Joseph himself? And of Fanny?
Fanny had been staying again with the kind farmer and was walking in a pleasant avenue near Booby Hall on her way to meet Joseph.
When a young gentleman had ridden up.
Excuse me, my dear. That great house there, is it Lady Booby's place?
It is, sir, and it please you?
It does indeed please me, but damn me, not half as much as you do. In truth, he knew perfectly well whose house it was, and had but asked the question to make Fanny look up, that he might discover if her face was equal to the delicacy of her shape. And it was.
Odd zoons, but pox take me if you ain't the handsomest creature I ever spied. I must dismount and view you closer. Now, would you... thank you. On my oath. Oh, you're a rare beauty. So you are.
Why, thank you, sir.
Odds bobs, those lips. You'd swear a bead stung them. Devil take it. I'll be quite distracted till I've tasted them. Here, kiss me, wench.
Oh, sir, I thank you for your compliments, which I little deserve. Since you wish it so heartily, I will let you kiss me. But I beg you, sir, that you be not rude.
Should you be at all amazed at Fanny's seeming forwardness, pray consider her confusion. For never before had she met with that thing the town calls a beau. And Mr. de Dapper, or Beau de Dapper, the appellation preferred by this cousin of Lady Booby's, was as pretty a specimen of that genus as might be found. He was about 4'5" in height. The shape of his body and legs were none of the best, for he had very narrow shoulders and no calf, so that as he approached Fanny, he seemed to be rather hopping than walking. His face was thin and pale, and the general qualifications of his mind were well adapted to the beauties of his person. And in both mind and person, he considered himself infinitely superior to the charming young creature whose lips he now assaulted so greedily.
Oh, bliss. Utter. Bliss.
Oh, sir, I pray you. Oh, I beg you.
And these breasts. Oh, I swear I'll not rest till I've kissed Zento. Divine.
Oh, sir, for shame, sir.
Fortunately for Fanny, our spark was not of the Herculean race, and just as he had torn the handkerchief from her breast, but before his lips had touched that seat of innocence and bliss, she dealt him such a lusty blow on that part of his neck which a hangman's noose would have graced, that he staggered back and fell to the ground.
At once, Fanny took to her heels and did not halt until she encountered Joseph on his way to Mr. Adams.
Oh, Joseph! My Joseph! Oh, Joseph!
Oh, Fanny! My Fanny!
Joseph! Joseph, let us nevermore be parted. Let us go now to Mr. Adams and beg him to marry us by special license.
These were propositions so agreeable to Joseph that had he heard them, he would have given an immediate assent.
But indeed, his eyes were now his only sense. Oh, Fanny, oh, there, ooh, oh, Fanny.
For you may recall that the elegant young gentleman had torn the handkerchief from Fanny's neck, exposing a sight that...
Fanny, oh.
Why, what is it, Joseph? Oh, close your eyes.
For Fanny, observing the fixed position of Josie's eyes, the snowy hue of her bosom suddenly blushed bright vermilion, and she at once clapped her handkerchief back round her neck.
There now, Joseph. You may now open your eyes again. Well, what I was saying, Joseph, was that we should go to Mr. Adams and beg him to marry us at once by special license.
Yes, Fanny. Yes. Yes, yes.
No, 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 child. No, I say. I must inform you, Joseph, that if in your purposed marriage to this young woman you have no intention but the indulgence of carnal appetites, you are guilty of a heinous sin, a very heinous sin.
But, Mr. Adams, I swear my only purpose is to protect my dear Fanny. But why? In this week alone has she not been 3 times saved from a rape? Only by the merest good fortune, and I fear
indeed,
that...
Indeed, and this fear, child, does it not argue a diffidence, highly criminal, of that power in which alone we should put our trust?
But, Mr. Adams, is it then sinful to love a husband and love him, to distraction?
Indeed, but it is, Fanny, if you love him without moderation. All passions are criminal in excess.
for have you not set your affections so absolutely on this young man that if God required him of you, you would reluctantly part with him?
Indeed I would, Mr. Adams.
Yet it is written, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, Fanny.
And Mr. Adams might have continued thus for some hours, for it was a favorite theme of his sermons, had he not been halted by loud knocking at his door. And one entered in haste to inform him that his youngest son was drowned in the weir.
Drowned? Drowned?
Oh, my God! My God, how can you afflict me so, to rob me of my little darling, my Jackie, my little Fatler, the comfort of my old age? Oh, Lord, Lord, where is your mercy, your justice?
But, Mr. Adams...
To so persecute an innocent who never did anything to offend...
Mr. Adams...
Jackie! My little Jackie! Shall I never see any more?
Mr. Adams, surely you will see your Jackie again, and in a better place. There you will meet again, never to part more.
Child, do not go on about... Oh, where is my little darling? I must...
And so he and Joseph sallied towards the river, and there were greeted by one who we take great delight in returning to our history, and at a most propitious moment, our old friend, the Irish peddler.
Ah, Mr. Adams, Your Honour, I do believe I've caught a fish that belongs to you, eh, Jackie?
Oh, Papa, this good man!
Oh, Jackie! Jackie! Oh, let me kiss you! Oh, my dear... Dear boy, and they tell me you were drowned.
Oh, well, there's always those that are a little too eager to carry ill news. Though 'twas lucky I was passing, for wasn't I on my way to visit you, as I promised?
Oh, my dear, dear friend, how can I charge such an obligation? All that I have is yours. Oh, my dear friend and benefactor.
No, not at all, my dear sir. Calm yourself, 'twas nothing. Ah, and Joseph... You're well, I hope. And the sweet Fanny?
Oh, we're both in good health, thank you. And speaking of which, Mr. Adams, I beg you, will you reconsider the matter we were discussing?
Matter? What matter was that, Joseph?
Why, my marriage to Fanny, Mr. Adams.
Ah, Joseph, no. There I am adamant. I say again... Do not give too much way to your emotions if thou dost expect happiness.
But, Mr. Adams, I protest! Who are you to...
Howsoever... Though I will not marry you by special license, I will read your banns again tomorrow, and again on Sunday, so that we may appoint Monday next for your wedding, if there be no objection.
And great was the joy of Joseph and Fanny at their prospective bliss. Yet they would not have been so happy had they known what was even then being plotted between the Lady Booby and the lawyer Scout.
Ah, my dear Mr. Scout. Have you brought the paper you spoke of?
I have, my lady. It is here.
Well, read it to me, pray.
The deposition of James Scout, lawyer, and Thomas Trotter, yeoman.
Wait. Who is this Thomas Trotter?
A most honest and tractable man, madam, and besides, one who is under some obligation to me.
Very well, proceed, I pray.
That the deponents state, and Thomas Trotter states, that on the 15th day of this instant October, he see Joseph Andrews and Fanny Goodwill walk across a certain field belonging to Lawyer Scout, and there he see Joseph Andrews with a knife cut a hazel twig of the value of 3 halfpence, and the said Fanny Goodwill did receive and carry the said twig. And the said James Scout, for himself, states that he verily believes the said twig to be his own proper twig.
Please, you, and may they be committed to Bridewell for a twig?
Yes, and with great lenity, too, for, had we called it a young tree, they would both be very liable to be hanged.
Oh.
But now I doubt not that Mr. Frolic will let them off with a month or so in Bridewell and a little stripping and whipping.
Stripping and whipping? Oh, my poor Joe. I'm not sure that great though their transgression no doubt is, I would wish it in my conscience that Joe... That they should be so treated.
Why, then I will give the constable orders to let them escape, and so we shall be rid of them and any encumbrance they might bring. For 'tis certain they would never dare to return.
Very well, then, Mr. Scout. You may proceed as you wish.
Now, Mrs. Slipstop, who had been present at this conversation in the sense that she had had her ear well pressed to the keyhole and had heard all that had been said, was much distressed by the turn events had taken. For well she believed that her mistress would shortly regret the harshness of her action, and in this she no doubt knew her mistress's mind better than did Lady Booby herself. But as she sped along the drive, as fast as her short legs and round frame would carry her, she was met by an approaching carriage.
Coachman! Stop! Stop! Why, Mrs. Slipslop, why this haste? And what may that be, pray? Well, if my aunt does carry them before the justice, no doubt they will both deserve their punishment, will they not?
Well, as for the woman, I'm sure they don't come to sympathize what becomes of her. But as for the young man, oh, Mr. Booby, it would be a thousand pities that such a graceless young man should die such a virulent death. But I open pray the justice will take the inspiration from his youth, for I'm sure if poor Joseph hath done anything, Fanny would be stem to it.
Wait, Mrs. Slipslop. Fanny? Would that be Fanny Goodwill?
Yes, Mr. Booby, but I'm sure such nasty creatures are a scandal to our sect.
And Joseph, Mrs. Slipslop, who is Joseph?
Joseph Andrews, Mr. Booby.
I feared as much. Pray get in, Mrs. Slipslop. This must be prevented, and with all haste. I must see my aunt at once. Come, whip up, coachman, whip up. We must make all speed.
Aye, Your Honour. Come on up now.
Mr. Booby's distress upon learning of Lady Booby's intended arraignment of Joseph was great indeed, for his purpose in coming to visit his aunt was to acquaint her with his own intended marriage with Joseph's sister, the virtuous Pamela. Now, those of you who are familiar with Mr. Richardson's account of the squire's wooing of Pamela may well be surprised that here has been accomplished in a few short weeks matters that took Mr. Richardson several volumes to achieve. Be not amazed, for it is with us authors as it is with travellers. Some go afoot, others a horseback. And so, you see, what took Mr. Richardson's plodding prolixity so long to achieve, I have but spurred into a gallop. The which explained, let us return to Mr. Booby, who, not without some trepidation, announced to his aunt his fixed intention to marry the servant girl, Pamela, and likewise pleaded with Lady Booby on behalf of his intended wife's brother, our hero, Joseph.
He was surprised and greatly relieved at the reception he received, especially when he came to speak of Joseph.
And so, my dear aunt, in view of what you have told me, I must beg you to withdraw this indictment. For I am sure, as you suggest, that you have been deceived in this matter by that villainous fellow scout.
Aye, I am sure I have been. For we poor, weak women are so innocent in all such things concerning the law that we fall an easy prey to such deceitful creatures.
And further, madam, as I am to marry a virtuous and worthy woman, I am resolved to own all her relations and show them proper respect. It is true her brother has been your servant, but he is now become my brother, and I intend he shall be seen in the character of a gentleman, and you will oblige me beyond expression if you would treat him as such.
This was a stroke of fortune beyond Lady Booby's hopes or expectation.
Nephew, you know how easily I am prevailed upon to do anything which Joseph Andrews desires. I'd rather mean which you desire. And as he is to be your relation, I cannot refuse to treat him as such.
Dear aunt, you have a kind, generous soul. And now there is one more favour you will as easily grant.
And what may that be?
There is a young woman whose name is Fanny...
And yet you... Pray don't let my good nature make you desire to impose on me. Though I have agreed to treat your brother-in-law as a relation, I will not accept all the dirty products in the company.
But madam, she's
a daughter. I expect you to dissuade him from such a match. If he is to be a gentleman, it will not be suitable. Let Joe, young Andrews, be got a commission in the army or some other genteel employment. And that done, his accomplishments, which I do not deny, will no doubt soon gain him a marriage, which will not be to the discredit of our family.
The squire, who knew Lady Booby's inflexibility, promised he would endeavour to dissuade Joseph from the match, though, having himself borne witness to Fanny's charms, he knew he had a heavy task. Nevertheless, he set off at once to Mr. Adams' house, where he found Joseph and Fanny at a supper of bacon and cabbage, with Mr. Adams and the peddler.
Why, Mr. Booby, you're heartily welcome to my poor cottage. Pray, be seated, I beg you.
Why, thank you, Mr. Adams. I must apologize for intruding upon your meal.
At which Mr. Adams offered to present the squire with a bone of bacon he had just been gnawing.
And which Mr. Booby politely declined.
Though he did in politeness accept the offer of a mug of small beer. And while Mr. Adams went to the tap to fetch it, the peddler addressed the squire.
Excuse me, Your Honor, but did I hear Mr. Adams say your worship's name was Booby?
Indeed it is, fellow. Why do you ask?
Would you be at all related to Sir Thomas Booby?
He was my uncle. His was the great house you may see across the park.
And did you ever hear of him buying a young girl of some 1 or 2 years from a travelling woman?
Fanny, who had been taking no part in the conversation but rather concerning herself with Joseph, started up when she heard this.
Why, sir, yes he did, and I am that child. For I never did know who my parents were.
Pray excuse my delay, Mr. Booby, for I had to broach a new barrel. Your health, sir.
And yours. Mr. Adams, this is the strangest of coincidences. It seems this fellow knows something of young Fanny's parents, for I had not known she was a foundling.
Nor indeed was she, sir.
How so? I beg you, pray explain yourself.
Well, to be as brief as possible. Mr. Adams, you may recall my telling you that I was formerly a soldier.
Indeed I do.
I was once on march from Bristol to Frome, a recruiting, when I fell in with a woman about 30 years old. Not very handsome, but well enough for a soldier. Now, as we were marching through that village where, you recall, Mr. Wilson lived, she commenced to weep great floods of tears, though she absolutely refused to tell me why. Then some years later, when we lay at Galloway, she fell ill of a fever and died on me.
Oh, the poor creature.
Aye. Well, when she was on her deathbed, she called me to her, and crying bitterly, declared she could not depart this world without discovering a secret to me, which sat heavily on her heart. She said she had formerly travelled in a company of gypsies who made a practice of stealing away children. She, for her own part, had only once been guilty of the crime.
And that was the theft of Mr. Wilson's baby?
Indeed it was, Joseph.
And am I then Mr. Wilson's daughter? The kind gentleman in Wiltshire?
No, not so, Fanny. That child was so sickly, she said, so sickly that they despaired of it living. So some of her companions, coming across a fine, healthy child lying in a cradle by a cottage, they exchanged the sickly child for it. And you are that child, taken from the cottager's cradle, and were sold to Sir Thomas for 3 guineas.
Oh, 'tis a curious tale indeed. And who were these cottagers? Did she tell you?
Aye, they lived in a village about 30 miles from here.
And here, to Mr. Booby's even greater surprise, the peddler named that very village where he had his own seat, and which was the place of Joseph's nativity.
And you recall the name of these poor cottagers?
Indeed, I do, Your Honor. Their name was Andrews.
The peddler, who had known Joseph simply by his Christian name, was struck by amazement at the various reactions of those present. Adams fell on his knees. Mr. Booby cried out in delight.
Why, then, my Pamela must be the substituted child. She is not your sister, Joseph. She is the daughter of this Wiltshire gentleman, Mr.
Wilson.
Indeed, and I might have known it.
Everything about her portrays that she is of gentle, not humble birth. I must acquaint her of your news at once.
But Mr. Booby's delight was more than overshadowed by Joseph's and Fanny's confusion. Joseph went pale.
Oh, Fanny. Oh, Fanny. Oh. Oh. Sister.
And Fanny almost swooned.
Oh, Joseph. Oh, Joseph. Oh. Oh, brother.
The melancholy of the young lovers was matched by that of the Lady Booby in her great house across the park. She could find no more savour in the delicacies placed before her at dinner than she might have done had she been offered Mr. Adams' bone of bacon. Excusing herself to her guest, Mr. De Dapper, she went to her chamber, where she began to arraign her own conduct in the following manner, or rather, in the manner we authors think fit to present such sentiments to you.
And why do I dote so upon Joseph? Upon a footman, a country buffoon. Oh, I despise, I detest my passion. Yet why? Is he not generous, gentle, kind? Yes, but kind to whom? To this Fanny, the meanest wretch, a creature below my consideration. Oh, how I detest the thought. Well, I thank heaven that my proper pride would disdain any pleasures that might be the consequence of so mean, so vulgar a... What? Who's there? What is it?
Oh, oh, my lady. Oh, we have such news.
Slip-slop, what means this? How dare you burst into my bedchamber like this? I've a good mind to...
Oh, larks and merry come up, madam. I'll swear you'll not be so sensibilious to me when you hear the news Squire Booby has just brought from Mr. Adams's hovel.
My nephew? News? What news is this?
Why, madam, it seems that Joseph and Fanny are brother and sister and may not marry.
The devil. How? What? Why? Slipknot, I command you to explain.
Well, a strange fellow has come to Mr. Adams and told how gypsies substituted Pamela Andrews and Fanny in their cradles. So that Fanny is, in truth, Joseph's sister. For you recall how Sir Thomas...
Bought Fanny from some gypsies as a foundling. Yes, yes, I... Oh. Oh. Ah, yes. Mm. This is indeed strange news, if it be true. But what is it to me?
Oh, why, odds bobs, my lady, how can you be so slow? Does it not leave the way open to you?
To marry Joseph? I, Slipslop, I marry Joseph? Thought it not entered my head. I... A footman, a lowly, boorish...
Oh, Fiddle-faddle, he is the handsomest, most properest man I ever saw. And if I were the lady of the greatest degree, it would be well for some folks
A moment, dear Mrs. Slipslop. You say if you were a woman of my condition, you would really marry Mr. Andrews?
Well, of course. When anyone can see you burning with passion for him...
Slipslop, I am astonished at the liberty you give your tongue. I believe my conduct may defy malice itself to assert so cursed a slander. If I had followed the example of some, Slipslop, in allowing myself indecent liberties, any wantonness, even with a husband. Yes, even the dear man who is gone. Were he alive again, could not upbraid me with any one act of tenderness or passion.
No, madam.
No, Slipslop, all the time I cohabited with him, he never obtained even a kiss from me, without my expressing reluctance in the granting of it. I'm sure he never suspected how much I loved him. Since his death, though it is almost 2 weeks...
It wants but a day, madam.
Since his death, I have not admitted one visitor, until my nephew arrived.
And Mr. De Dapper.
And Mr. De Dapper.
And Lady Tittle.
And Lady Tittle.
And Lady Tattle.
And Lady Tattle.
And Lady Greyvairs.
Slipslop, I have confined myself to one party of friends... And can such conduct be arraigned? To be accused not only of a passion which I have always despised, but of fixing
laying it on such an object, a creature beneath my notice.
Upon my word, ma'am, I do not understand your ladyship. Is not Mr. Booby to make young Joseph a gentleman? If Hawkins! If I was Mrs. Andrews with 100 a year, I should not envy the best she that wears a head. I say again, I wish I were a great lady for his sake, and I fancy if you married him, few would venture to tell him he was no gentleman to his face.
Or mine either. But go to, Slipsop, enough of your nonsense. You are a comical creature. Well, I find I have quite recovered my appetite. I will descend and question my nephew myself over supper.
But Mr. Booby could not satisfy his aunt in this matter, for the Lady Booby suspected the story from her ardent desire that it should be true. And so it was resolved to send for Fanny and the peddler to question them more closely.
Thus it was the peddler now attended Lady Booby at Booby Hall.
As did Fanny.
Joseph, who would not quit his dear, dear sister.
Mr. Adams. Joseph, Fanny, my dear children, you must offer up thanksgivings to Providence. Be joyful for so miraculous an escape.
Yes, Mr. Adams, I am sure I am joyful.
The Lady Booby, who was little used to such company, entertained them all, even the peddler, to supper.
And Mr. Adams in particular made an excellent repast, notwithstanding the vast quantities of bacon, cabbage and beer he had earlier put away. Joseph and Fanny, though, ate little.
Oh, Fanny.
Oh, Joseph.
Dear sister, let us vow perpetual celibacy and live together as brother and sister all our days.
Yes, dear brother, and so we may indulge a platonic friendship. For Mr. Adams has often spoken to us of the virtues of such friendships, which it seems were common among the ancients. Dear brother Joseph.
The peddler repeated his tale and was questioned closely by Lady Booby.
And his answers and honest manner soon convinced her of the truth of his words, as did his description of the circumstances of Fanny's being sold to her late husband.
The company sat up late and were just quitting Booby Hall at 2 o'clock in the morning when... The notoriously tempestuous weather of that October again intervened to affect our history.
The soaking of the curate and some of her humbler villagers would normally have meant little to Lady Booby, but she was now of such a benign humour, occasioned by the peddler's news, that she found herself inviting the entire company to stay the night at Booby Hall, rather than brave the tempest outside.
All retired to their beds at once. Joseph and Mr. Adams first knelt to their maker.
Amen.
And then were soon asleep. Not so Fanny, Mrs. Slipslop, or Lady Booby.
Oh, Joseph. Oh, Joseph.
Oh, joy.
Oh, Joseph. Oh,
but at last they too were granted the balm of slumber. Until the only person left awake in the house was Beau Didipper,
whose prodigious passion for the divine Fanny, no whit reduced by the blow he had received from her, would not allow him to rest.
Instead, he drew on his breeches, quietly opened his door, and stole softly along the gallery.
Oh, devil, take it. A chamber pot. Now let me consider. Which one? Which one is it? Fanny? Fanny?
Until, listening at the door of one chamber, he heard...
This must be it. Now, what shall I... Masterly. I have it.
Fanny.
Aye, my little cowslip, it is I, your rustic lover, Joseph. Ooh, arr. I am come to acquaint thee, divine creature, as to how I be at a discovering the falsehood of the tale we did hear last night. So, seeing as how I bain't your brother after all, my dear little turnip, we need not deny our mutual pleasure any longer. I'll just divest myself of my breeches. And your beloved Joseph, well...
Joseph!
It is, my angel, and all hot for ye.
Fanny
Jones, you're stifling me. Thanks, Fanny, pray. Fanny, sister. Oh, Fanny, help. Help.
Joseph. You are Joseph?
Mrs.
What are you doing in my bed?
But I don't rightly know, ma'am. Oh, upon my word, I'm...
Parson Adams, who lay in the next chamber.
Merciful heaven. What is it? Oh, never fear. Here I come.
Without staying to put a rag of clothes on, Mr. Adams hastened into the apartment next door.
No, I beg you. Oh, let me go, pray, this is... Help, sir.
Never fear, madam. I will save you from this foul fiend there. Take that. Flee, madam. Flee while I deal with this devil.
Mr. Adams' mistake in assuming Mr. De Dapper was the ravished maiden was not so surprising as it would seem, for laying hold of the bow, he had found his skin extremely soft. And hearing his pleas for help, the good parson had not doubted but that this was the lady in danger. And then, upon laying hold of Mrs. Slipslop's chin, where he found a rough beard, his belief was confirmed.
Mr. De Dapper made good his escape.
Leaving behind him a contest, the like of which was not seen in the world since Theseus fought the Amazon Queen, and which was only interrupted by the arrival of Lady Booby with a candle.
What is this, pray? I will not have such disturbance in my house.
I have been ravished. I have been so terrified. There have been a dozen men in my room. And this, Mr. Adams.
Miss Slipslop, what have I took you for? Then who was it? I must have...
Sir, cover yourself at once.
And Mr. Adams, in his confusion at his nakedness, seizing the first thing that came to hand, caught the laced shirt and jewelled breeches belonging to Mr. De Dapper.
Here, Slipslop, what is the meaning of this? Surely those garments do not belong to Mr. Adams?
Sure, madam, I...
Eureka! I have it. Undoubtedly, they belong to the young gentleman I mistook for a woman. I'm coming into the room when I heard Mrs. Slipslop's cries for help.
What is this?
Mr. Adams then gave an account of the reason of his rising from his bed and all the rest that was so patently in keeping with his known character that he was at once believed by both ladies and all retired to rest. Not without some confusion on Mr. Adams' part, who, upon leaving the bedchamber, mistakenly turned right rather than left. Clutching Mr. De Dapper's shirt to his person, he entered first Fanny's room, and was indeed about to clamber into her bed when...
What is it? Oh, Mr. Adams. Where am I?
Oh, bless me. Oh, where am I? Oh, Fanny. Pray, excuse me.
Then, Mr. Boobies.
Oh, Pamela. Oh, sweet, virtuous Pamela. Oh. Oh. Oh, Mr. Adams.
My apologies, sir. My deepest apologies.
And finally, Joseph's room, who, well knowing his old friend's infirmity in these matters, conducted the parson back to his own room. At breakfast next day, which was late, the company was very merry. Even Joseph and Fanny, having resolved to live as brother and sister, were rather more cheerful. The Lady Booby produced a diamond button from the beau's breeches, which he very readily owned.
"'Tis confounded true, ma'am. I have a frightful propensity to walk in my sleep. And as to what happened between myself and Mrs. Slipslop, why, I cannot say, for I swear I can never recall my actions."
"'Laughs, Mr. De Dapper. I'll not be the one to tell."
Their tea was scarce over when news came of the arrival of old Mr. Andrews and his wife, together with that famous person whose name has been so much a part of this history, Pamela herself. You may well imagine that the meeting between Joseph and Pamela was not without tears of joy on both sides. And indeed you must imagine it, for we have no intention of portraying such sentimental stuff to you. But such was Pamela's virtuous disposition that when she learned that they were not indeed brother and sister, she nonetheless resolved ever to treat Joseph as a brother.
"For dear Joseph, though you are no longer my equal, since I now learn I am a gentlewoman by birth, and as such am above you, yet I hope I will never behave with an unbecoming pride towards you, but will always endeavour to behave towards you as I have formerly done, and question not the assistance of grace to that purpose, dear Joseph."
Gaffer and Gamma Andrews were kindly received by the Lady Booby.
And by Mr. Booby, who, the company now being gathered in the parlour, took upon himself to inform the old gentleman that Fanny...
Whom he took by the hand. Oh!
Was Mr. Andrews' daughter stolen by the gypsies?
No, she bain't. Never had no daughter stolen by no gypsies. Never heard such nonsense in my life. Have you, wife?
Oh, dearest Papa, Mama, can it be that you have perhaps forgotten the occurrence?
No.
Then, Mother, is not Fanny, after all, my sister?
Oh, she is not your sister.
Fanny!
Joseph!
Told you she bain't. Now, has anyone got any baccy? I want me pipe. I'm not a whiff all morning.
Come you here, child. Let me embrace you.
Mrs. Andrews?
Yes, you are my daughter.
What's this?
But you are not Joseph's sister. You are Pamela's sister.
Oh, dear sister. Dear sister Fanny.
What's this nonsense? What have you been saying?
Dear husband, you may remember, my dear, when you went a sergeant to Gibraltar, you left me big with child.
Well, that I did. She'd be right there. Well, go on, woman.
In your absence, I was brought to bed, I verily believe, of this daughter, whom I remember well, for did I not suckle her at this very breast?
Oh, mother, dear mother!
My child. One afternoon, when she was about a year old,
Two gypsy women came and offered to tell my fortune. One had a child on her lap. I showed them my hand and desired to know if you was ever to come home again, which they said you was.
So I did, too. I was a soldier in Nyon.
Pray let your wife continue, Mr. Andrews.
I left the girl in the cradle and went to draw the women some liquor. And when I returned with it, the women were gone. Hearing a child cry in the cradle, I went to take it up. But, oh, the living! Instead of my own fat, thriving girl, I found a poor, sickly boy that seemed he had not an hour to live, which is our Joseph here, as stout as he now stands. I ran out, pulling my hair off and crying like any man after the women, but never could hear a word of them from that day to this. When I came back, the poor infant lifted up his eyes to me so piteously that I determined to keep him and try to nurse him to health, which I did by the time you returned.
Why you never told me this?
Well, my dear, when you saw Joseph and said he was a chopping boy and kissed him, I was afeard you would not love him as much as I did if you knew him to be a gypsy child.
And do you swear this is the truth, Mrs. Andrews?
I'll take my oath on it before any justice in the kingdom, Your Honour.
The peddler then explained to her whose son Joseph really was.
Oh, a Wiltshire gentleman. Oh, well, my, my.
And Mr. Booby at once dispatched his coach to bring Mr. Wilson to Booby Hall to be reunited with his son.
And Mr. Wilson and his wife came and immediately knew Joseph as their son by virtue of recognizing on Joseph's chest one of those strawberry birthmarks so frequently useful to we writers of sentiment. And they wept with joy and gladly gave their consent to Joseph's marriage with Fanny. And all,
save Lady Booby,
were merry as a marriage bell.
Wilt thou, Joseph Andrews, Joseph Wilson, have this woman, Fanny Andrews, to thy wedded wife? To live together after God's ordinance in the holy estate of matrimony, wilt thou love, comfort her, honour and keep her in sickness and in health, and forsaking all other, keep thee only unto her, so long as ye both shall live?
I will.
And wilt thou, Fanny Good, Andrew.
Oh, I will, not Mr. Adams.
Not yet. Wilt thou have this man, Joseph Wilson, to live together in the same holy...
At the wedding breakfast, Mr. Adams demonstrated an appetite surprising as well as surpassing everyone present, having his own cause for celebration since Mr. Booby had presented him with a living of £130 a year. And Joseph sang.
Oh, rapture unthought of before, to be thus of Chloe possessed, nor she, nor no tyrant's hard power, her image can tear from my breast.
At length, after a day passed with the utmost merriment,
Fanny retired with a mother-in-law, and a sister. She was soon undressed.
Oh!
Joseph no sooner heard she was in bed than he fled with the utmost eagerness to her. A minute carried him into her arms.
Oh, Fanny.
Oh, Joseph.
Where we shall leave this happy couple to enjoy the private rewards of their constancy.
Oh, Joseph.
Oh, Fanny. Oh.
Rewards so great and sweet that I apprehend Joseph neither envied the noblest duke nor Fanny the finest duchess that night. And there we ring down the curtain upon our History of the Adventures of Joseph Andrews and His Friend Mr. Abraham Adams by your humble servant, Henry Fielding, Gentleman. Oh, but ere we part, you are no doubt concerned for our poor broken-hearted heroine, the Lady Booby. Pray, do not distress yourselves. She returned to London before the wedding. There, a young captain of dragoons, together with eternal parties at cards, soon obliterated the memory of Joseph Andrews. ¶¶
In the fourth and final episode of Joseph Andrews by Henry Fielding, dramatized for radio by John Scotney, Fielding was played by John Rye, Joseph Andrews by Cornelius Garrett, Lady Booby by June Barry, and Parson Adams by John Franklin Robbins. Jane Leonard was Fanny, Anne Jameson, Mrs. Slipslop, Jeffrey Bateman, John Booby, Ronald Herdman, Beau Didipper, Sean Barrett, the Irish peddler, Trevor Nichols, Mr. Scout, Sarah Benfield, Pamela, and June Tobin, Gamma Andrews. The title music was composed and directed by Vic Gammon, with Mary Mobbs, bassoon, and Mary Carson, violin. Technical presentation was by David Toombs, Peter Smith, and Andrew Wilson. Joseph Andrews was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.